Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, the definitive sports video game show, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Well, all right, we are back, and we are better than ever. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Welcome to the Press Row Podcast for your Friday, February 6, 2015. The band is back together after a brief holiday/winter hiatus. We've got most of the regular crew back. A couple of them haven't quite made it back for various reasons that we'll get into in a minute. But let's get right into it. Moving from left to right on your radio, up first, on the drums, representing the great state of Washington, from Pasta Padre, Mr. Brian Weedy. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I was so sure you were going to bring up the Seahawks and the Super Bowl, Rich, that I was ready I was going to be upset about it and say thanks for starting the show on such an upbeat note, how we could go through all the various times I've had my heart broken throughout my life. But you didn't do it.
No, I'm a good guy. I'm not trying to pour salt on those delicious wounds.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to manage here.
delicious wounds.
Oh, did that slip out? I'm sorry. Be it for me to share in the misery of a professional football team's failures.
Look, as a Seattle sports fan, and I've talked about this many times, I'm probably more comfortable with this feeling than I was with the feeling of winning a Super Bowl. And just it was just so foreign to me. But I was used to disappointment and just heartbreak over the years, and now I'm back to that. I guess I'm back in the groove.
Good to know. Up next, fresh off a in-person victory at West Ham, on the keyboards from US Gamer, Ms. Kat Bailey. Kat, welcome to the show.
The keyboard? Okay, that's an interesting instrument there. Hi, everybody. I am back from a fairly lengthy trip in Europe. And as Rich said, I attended my first ever Premier League game while I was there. I took a day trip to London and watched West Ham beat Hull City 3-0. It was an amazing experience, and I highly recommend it. Even if you don't have a Premier League team, go to one. Like, find a game, go watch Arsenal or Chelsea or something. Oh, maybe not Chelsea because their atmosphere sucks. But hey, even Jose Mourinho says so. He keeps saying how much his fans stink, and then just soak it in because it's so different from the American sports atmosphere. It really is something special. Everybody is 100% locked in on the game. the stadiums are loud. There's no music or distractions from what's happening on the field. The joy is real. Go do it. It's great.
I completely agree. As somebody who attended a Premier League match a couple of years ago, I could not agree more. Up next, the executive editor of Operation Sports, on the rhythm guitar, Mr. Chris Sanner. Chris, welcome back to the show.
I'm going to be the prima donna and say, why am I the rhythm guitar? I'm so much more talented than that. I am lead guitar material, Rich. I'm sick of being relegated to this rhythm guitar status. That's all I got to say.
Hey, man, the rhythm guitar is a vital part of the band, a vital part of the band.
Well, you can say I do keep the beat and I keep everybody in sync, but at the same time, you know, it's just time for me to – time for my wings to spread. I'm a butterfly. I gotta fly.
Are we having musical differences already? We haven't even gotten through the introductions. Oh,
I know. Yeah.
Up next, pounding away on the bass guitar from Polygon, Mr. Owen Good. Owen, welcome to the show.
I feel like I should try to scat a Seinfeld bass guitar bumper riff there.
Perfect.
I've never played bass guitar. I've never played a guitar in my life, Rich. I'm not sure where you've come up with this hidden talent, but yes, I'm happy to provide a walking bass line for the rest of our show tonight.
Love it. And I am Rich Grisham, jamming on the lead guitar, of course, because that's what I do. That riff of Sweet Child of Mine you just heard, yeah, that was all me. All kidding aside, thank you everybody for being here. We're very excited. As I mentioned, we got everybody or most of us back together. Sumit is in India, so he is not able to join us. And TJ apparently has triple pneumonia or something like that. So best wishes to TJ to make it back. Somehow he's able to tweet all day and all night long, but he can't come on the show and podcast.
I just want to say this, Rich. TJ, you completely – I mean, I get it. You just don't want to be a part of the show anymore. So it's cool. It's cool. As we enter a new season, I mean, we're going to take a vote and kick you off. I mean, it's just how it is. Right, Rich?
The gauntlet has been thrown. The gauntlet has
been thrown. Oh, my God. You guys are cold. Jeez. Wow.
All right. So we are going to have basically we're going to take a look ahead and look at 2015. We've got a bunch of interesting topics to go over. But before we do that, it has been a while since we have all gotten together. And many of us have been playing various different types of sports games, have different narratives. And I thought it would be an interesting way to kick off the show and talk a little bit about where we are, what we have been playing. I mean, the interesting thing about this time of the year is, you know, there hasn't been a new sports game out in a while. Pro Evolution was the last one, and that was in early November. The next new sports game, and I guess I'm wrong, Super Mega Baseball did come out in December, so I take that back. The next new game isn't until, I believe, late March is when MLB The Show comes out. And so a lot of us, you know, when we're playing sports games, we're just settled into whatever we really feel like playing. There's no review pressure, none of that kind of stuff. So I thought it'd be fun to start off and go around the table and find out where each individual's narrative is. We're going to start with at least partially start with me. And our Press Row podcast, Madden League, continues to be alive and raging. Several of us on the show tonight are in the league. Owen was in the league. But thanks to a combination of multiple device hardware failures, Owen's Perseus Oxendine has had to endure as a zombie, unfortunately. It's a sad state of affairs.
How is he doing, actually?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I bet you I can find out before the end of the show.
No, I'd be interested to know if he disperses and becomes like actually a free agent worth a damn.
I've got the stats here, actually.
Okay. Let's hear it.
So I guess this is through 16 or 15 games. We're in week 17, so it hasn't simmed the last game.
Of year two, that's right. We're in week 17 of year two.
Yeah, so he has 790 yards on 248 carries. So it's 3.2 yards a carry, Owen, which is not very good. And
no.
You're talking Trent Richardson territory here. And only 7 touchdowns. And he's caught 38 balls, though, for 139 yards.
This is a Peyton Hillis regression to the mean, and I don't mean to ride herd on you there, Rich, but, I mean, I believe Perseus had 1,600 yards rushing in his first season.
Yes.
He was tied for the league lead in touchdowns. He was the offensive player of the year. He was the rookie of the year. Everything played out just, like, perfectly in terms of the enormous XP bonus you get for having a breakout year. And I ran into those problems with online connectivity, which I won't belabor. I just said the hell with it. I'm frankly done with online multiplayer, but that's another story. I'm saddened to hear that Perseus Oxendine of Newberry College, South Carolina, is having such a pedestrian second year.
Well, he does play without a face mask, so perhaps he's had a few concussions.
He has to do that because of a medical condition, and he got a waiver from the league to play without a face mask.
That is true. So in that Madden Press Row League, I am the Philadelphia Eagles, and somehow, some way, and my Eagles actually made it to the Super Bowl last year and lost to TJ's Colts, but somehow, some way, heading into the last game of the regular season, my Eagles are 13-1-1. Which is pretty amazing. LeSean McCoy has just crossed the 2,000-yard barrier, has 2,063 yards, 16 touchdowns. He's also caught 57 passes for 444 yards and 4 TDs. What's interesting in Philadelphia is that there is quite a quarterback controversy. Nick Foles started the first, I don't know, 7 or 8 games and had a pretty solid rating. He's at a 110.5 quarterback rating. 106 out of 141 for 1,229 yards, 14 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. But then late in a game, I scrambled with him and just got absolutely destroyed. And he,
He broke his collarbone, I believe. It was a serious injury, knocked him out for a while. So rookie, a guy that I drafted in the first year's draft, Nicholas Daniel has come in. And he started off really hot. He has regressed a little bit, but Nicholas Daniel has a quarterback rating of 96.8. He has 228 completions and 341 attempts for 2,500 yards, 27 touchdowns, and 15 interceptions. So heading into the end of the year, technically speaking, Nick Foles is doing better quarterback rating-wise, but Nicholas Daniel has led the team to nothing but either victories or that one draw. So interesting times in Philadelphia, but the best thing is I just played the Packers last night. The Packers were lined up as the number one seed, but by me knocking them off, if I can beat the CPU Cowboys late of Garnett Lee, I will be the number one seed in the NFC heading into the playoffs. So exciting, interesting times, but who will the quarterback be? That's what they're asking in Philadelphia. Brian Weedy, you are also in the Press Row Podcast League. How is your season going with the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Yeah, so season one, I missed the playoffs by, a game or two, I think. And so this season, I'm into the playoffs. I finished 13-3, but that doesn't even win me the division because the Texans went 15-1. So I'm going to be in at the 5 seed. And really, my focus on free agency and the draft after year one was to improve my offensive line, because again, I'm the Jaguars. So offensive line was in shambles and the defense really was horrible. So improve the offensive line and improve the defense. And I think I did that pretty well, or as well as I could have. My defense is up to something like number 13 in the league. And my running game, led by Storm Johnson, is only behind LeSean McCoy. He finished the season 1,659 yards, but he led the league in touchdowns with 23. And then I had some interesting goings on at quarterback, where Blake Bortles is my starter, and he's pretty good. Finished 25 touchdowns to 12 interceptions, but he was injured for a stretch of, I believe, 5 or 6 games near the end of the season. My backup, Jake Locker, gets injured in literally the first play of the game after Bortles got hurt. Okay, and you know I love Jake Locker because he's a UW grad, but
it is a tragedy that you have both Bortles and Locker on the same team.
This is my strategy, though. So I had to pick him up. So he was cheap; it was like $1 million. So I had to turn to my third stringer, which was a guy I drafted. So he's a rookie. I got him, I think, in the 4th or 5th round. His name is Turner Swanson, and overall, his rating is 62 or 63, something like that. But, Rich, as you've learned with sometimes the ratings aren't really indicative of how well they perform for you for whatever reason. I found over the years sometimes that when I – and this is true in various sports games – but when you aren't relying on somebody who you know is good or really good, you tend not to force things as much. So
yes.
So when you have a lower rated guy, you might be, or at least for me, I tend to be a little maybe more selective in my throws or turn more to a running game, and I end up performing better. So here comes in this guy's rated 62 or 63. And in the, I believe the 5 games he played in or the 4 games he started plus extra time, 10 touchdowns to 2 interceptions and almost 1,300 yards. And we didn't lose one of those games. I mean, we're on a, I don't know, 8-game win streak or something like that. So nice. So that's just kind of interesting. Added a little drama at the end of the season, and maybe those stats and that experience will get his ratings up, because, you know, we're not real satisfied with the whole progression XP system and game prep stuff. So, yeah, that's where I'm at, 13-3. Heading into the playoffs, and I think I'll take on the Patriots in round one, which adds a little something to the way I'm feeling this week.
Man, sure does. Greg Ford and his Patriots get a little revenge there. Cat Bailey, you are back in the Press Row League after taking a sabbatical, as you decided to, I don't know, tour Europe like a real person does instead of just stay home and play computer simulated football all the time. What's happening with your beloved Minnesota Vikings?
It's dark days, Rich. Very dark days. I was, I think, 4-2, maybe 5-2 when I left. And I'm pretty sure I lost every single simmed game. I came back, the capper being, and I don't want to give you too much crap, the capper being, of course, when you guys advanced literally the day before I got home, so I couldn't get my last game in.
Whoops, sorry about that. All you did was ask nicely twice. Yep.
Yeah. But I got home to find out that Adrian Peterson has a full MCL tear and is out for 32 weeks.
Ouch.
That's two solid years.
Wow.
I mean, it was like he was, you know, kicked out of the league or something.
I don't even know if I can cut him. He might just be on my roster until his contract runs out and I can't use him. Pretty much my entire team was at zero confidence, including all my rookies, which I had a really great draft last time. Like, I addressed every position. I got two really promising receivers. I got like an 83 overall guard. Like, I was riding high after that draft. And they were all at zero confidence. So in a way, I was rebuilding, and it's been rough. It's rough when you're at zero confidence and you have a second year quarterback like Teddy Bridgewater. And I lost my first couple games coming back, and I haven't missed the playoffs in Madden since the second season of Madden 12, which coincidentally was also a year that I went to Europe and came back to find that I was 0-5 or something like that. So I'm not really used to missing the playoffs, and I don't particularly like it. So now I'm kind of in rage mode, or beast mode, I guess you could say. I'm practicing like crazy to try and actually get good at this version of Madden. I haven't been very good at this version of Madden, which is funny because this version of Madden, not that different from Madden 11, which I was pretty good at once upon a time. Like, as I've discovered, like, four verticals is a really good play. I'm getting a hang of the offense again, finally, which has been something that I've been struggling with. So my hope is to have another really good draft, because I finally got the hang of this drafting thing now that the drafts are randomized and people aren't able to use cheat sheets. It's a lot easier to find hidden gems in the later rounds as opposed to having every single guy just vacuumed up in the first three rounds. Mm. So yeah, I'm hopeful that my team will gel more next year and that I will be able to make a serious run at Mike and Craig. At the moment, I am 7-8. And I am playing the Chicago Bears.
Oh boy!
In week 17, they're an old rival. Mike Phillips, yep, of the Player One podcast is an old rival of mine. I beat him a number of times in the playoffs, and he was pretty grumpy about that. he is like 12-4 or something like that. He's like in the wild card. He's going to the playoffs. Yes. I wish him all the best, but I want to kick his ass in week 17 just to prove to myself that I can, so I can come out of the gate really strong next season.
Boy, a lot of bulletin board material happening right here. A lot of bulletin board material. I love it. Fantastic. Chris Sander, what has your sports game narrative been over the holidays and the wintry January and early February of 2015?
Well, I've been trying to drown my sorrows away on the Thunder's lackluster season by actually continuing to manage them well into the future. I'm in year three now, actually. And I have Westbrook and Durant still somehow. That won't happen in real life, almost certainly. But I do have them in NBA 2K and my GM mode. And we have still yet to win a championship. And that, I don't know if that's ever going to change. But recently, actually, I did play a little bit of golf club over the last month. But I am on a game right now called Perfect Golf. It's a new golf game that is under, like, it's early access on Steam. It's not finished. You know, you get in there, there are some things that will, you notice it's not finished. But it's basically the most brutally realistic golf game I think I've played, in the sense that when you the swing mechanics just unforgiving as heck. I mean, you got to get it perfect, straight up, straight down, right rhythm, everything, and it's, you know, to make it perfect. And the courses are, I mean, just absolutely beautiful, especially if you turn your PC way up on it. So it's still got a lot of ways to go. It's still got, you know, the short game needs a little bit of work, putting needs a little bit of work, but just overall, I mean, the vision behind it, the physics where every shot's different, you know, no, there's no scripting whatsoever. It's a real physics wind hitting the ball. It's pretty cool to see some of those effects. And shot shaping, they don't have the presets and stuff in there. I don't know if they will or not. I talked to the COO of Perfect Parallel, and he didn't know if they were going to put that in or not. But, you know, you have to manually go in and actually adjust everything if you want to shape a shot, that sort of thing. So it's an interesting game. And really, you know, I'm all about the independent sports games out there, and this is another cool one that we're going to be looking forward to this year.
You know, I listened to the Operation Sports podcast, the interview that you did. I've read your thoughts on it after playing, and I can hear Owen Good's face hitting his palm as you describe Perfect Golf as somehow being significantly more difficult than the golf club. And Owen, as a longtime golf game proponent, was not particularly a fan of the golf club. And now Perfect Golf takes that and ups the difficulty even more. I mean, that sounds like a pretty
I'm not shut off to difficulty. I mean, and I would like to think that I play golf on a console with some difficulty. I am.
That's true. You are. No, you have mentioned in the past the various settings you have, which are significantly more difficult than the defaults, for sure.
It's the lack of information feedback. I mean, that is the biggest thing that separates, like, you know, real world golf from playing golf, which is having some expectation when you line up your shot. And Chris, if you're talking about, you know, putting needs work and you don't really have any idea of the strength of your putt or its roll or its break or whatever, I mean, that's problematic to me, but I'm not shut off to it. I did see your preview. I did see Operation Sports write about it today, and I'm interested in taking a look at it. I don't know if I'm going to go in on early access, but I'm interested in taking a look at it on PC.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's just with any early access game, you have to have some lowered expectations because it's not finished. And that's, you know, that's very apparent with it right now. But there are some I can see where they're going. I mean, they give the instant feedback you get whenever you hit a shot is actually quite fascinating, just as far as the physics. They actually, you know, all the calculations, the angle you hit the ball, the velocity, et cetera, it's all calculated. So it's pretty cool. And, you know, the vision behind the future about adding, you know, new shafts, new club heads, all that fun stuff. So if they get it right, it could be an awesome game. If they get it wrong, it's going to be, you know, a brutally realistic game that's going to, you know, it's going to be a very niche thing.
All right, so Owen Good, what has been your narrative in sports games over the holidays and the early part of 2015?
Well, I think everybody understands my record on Super Mega Baseball and just how enamored of the game I am. So I'll try to be brief on that. I've played two 48-game seasons on it. The second one, I don't know, Super Mega Baseball has something called the Ego setting, which is an excellent variable difficulty obviously everybody's familiar with sliders and how they want to, you know, position certain aspects of a game, make something more difficult, make something less difficult. Super Mega Baseball being an arcade game, it has like one variable slider, and it's called the Ego setting. And I had been playing at 60, and it goes up to 100. And I think the game's makers themselves said that they can't even win at 90 or something like that. So I was feeling really good about myself at 60. But I started my second season 13-9, and I was thinking I was in real trouble. And when you're at that kind of a high-level setting, the opposing pitching just doesn't give you anything good to hit. So I buckled down. I didn't back the settings down. I just decided to, you know, try to keep my focus. And I set a goal of winning 9 games in a row, because if we did that, I felt like we would catch the team that was in front of us by 5 games in the standings at that point. And we did. And that was at midpoint of the season. And then we won 24 of our next 25. And probably the most fascinating thing about all this, I mean, we had multiple close victories, 2-run victories, 1-run victories. We had many walk-offs in there. We had some games in which we took the lead in the 8th inning. But there is a player on the team, and I play with, for those who know the game, I play with the wide loads, and they are positioned as a power-hitting team. But with all of the buffs and the power-ups that you can put to a team, mine end up being like really good hitters, but also having really good shutdown pitching. And in the final run through the season, the third baseman who hits fourth in my lineup had like 8 home runs in the final 10 games and won the Triple Crown on the last day of the season.
Love that.
And I wrote the column about how, and some people were like, why do you think this is so profound, you know, that you can't restart a game? But, and that's true. I mean, I play other games. For example, I have never restarted a round at Augusta National and Tiger Woods PGA Tour. That's just been sort of a personal value of mine. There's nothing to it other than that. It's just, you know, and there's nothing to verify that. I have never restarted a round there, certainly not in career mode. But in Super Mega Baseball, once you begin a game, you cannot restart that game. You will be tagged with a loss if you do because of how it handles its leaderboard. So I felt like, not only was that 24-25 streak, which included runs of 14 in a row and then 10 in a row, not only was that authentic, so was the Triple Crown pursuit. Because if you can restart in a career mode, you can go back and, you know, if you don't get the stats that you want, you can go back and replay that game. But he blew into the Triple Crown at the end, and it was great because he won the Triple Crown in his first at-bat with a home run. Into left field, and if anybody plays this game, it was the one in the Lowlywood. It was the L.A. looking place that they have at Sunset, and he hit it into the pavilion. I mean, it went like 480 feet. I have no idea what the distance tops out at in Super Mega Baseball. I've never seen anything hit 500 feet, but this was close. And I went through the whole charade of letting the player go back out to the field and then substituting him so that he could, you know, and it's just, you're just inventing it in your head, you know.
That's
the standing
right.
ovation
awesome.
that the player would get for something like that, even after doing a curtain call. But in the playoffs, and this was, I was playing at Ego 60, and I felt like if I had won 24 of 25, then I was beating this game to a degree that was undeserved. And not so much that, I mean, that's a statistical anomaly, and yes, I feel like I'm pretty good at how to play that game, but I felt like, okay, I need to toughen it up. And even at 65, I started having real problems. I went 30 innings in the postseason without a run.
Oof.
And I lost the championship series, 4-2, and I just sort of had to sit there, you know, with a brick in my lap and take it. But I felt, again, if the earlier part of the season, the winning streak that got me into, you know, such a spectacular, I mean, I had a better than 700 winning percentage, and all the things that I accomplished, if that had authenticity because I couldn't restart, well, then, you know, the outcome had authenticity for the same reasons. And there are teams that are extremely powerful that had great runs through the regular season and through the last leg of the postseason and then didn't make it in the final game. And, you know, one of them, their name might rhyme with Schmeattle Schmeehawks. And my disappointment is nowhere near theirs in real life, but I felt like, okay, you know, it was just sort of another layer of authenticity that this game can add, you know, if you're playing it seriously, you know, if you're indulging in the emergent narratives that everybody likes to put in on their seasons. But that was... I finished that season like a week ago. It's been like eating 5 gallons of ice cream at once. I've gorged on that game, and I need to step away from it and go on to the other things. So I re-rolled a character in Skyrim, of course.
Of course. Absolutely. All right. Well, as most of you who listen to the show regularly know, I continue to be an absolute freak about NBA 2K15. I am fully invested in two separate modes. The first is my player. It is Christmas Eve in season 2 for my 6'4", 200-pound shooting guard from Rider University. I play for the Phoenix Suns. That's who let me join the club on my first 10-day contract. And after the season was over, I had a lot of conversations with a lot of people and ultimately decided to stay in Phoenix. But I will tell you, the reason I decided to stay in Phoenix was not because of any other reason other than money. If I tell you it's not about the money, that is a lie. Because as I was going through the numbers about making my decision, I realized that I will earn more VC every game if I stayed in Phoenix. And that's exactly why I stayed in Phoenix. And I tell you, it's paid off because as of now, it is only just, like I said, it's Christmas Eve 2015 in Phoenix. My guy has earned 48,695 career VC. I have not spent a dollar on it. I have used the app. So that is the one caveat. I do use the app on my phone, not every day, but whenever I remember to, I do that. But 48,000 VC. I am a 90 overall. I've got 14 badges. It is late December. I'm averaging 22.8 points a game, 2.8 assists a game, and 4.1 rebounds per game. I'm shooting at a 51% clip, 43% from 3-point range. I have a B+ average grade. My team chemistry somehow only is 76, and my coach is only at a 67% satisfaction. It's kind of strange. But the most important thing is my Phoenix Suns, who missed the playoffs last year, we're 20-7. We're first in the Western Conference, 3 games ahead of Memphis. And I've got 772,000 fans on social media. So needless to say, I am having a great time in Phoenix, and I am earning lots of VC, and I continue to just love my player. It is, I mean, I play it as often as I can. It's one of my go-to treadmill modes. I'll even find myself not on the treadmill late at night, instead of going to bed, playing a game. And I have not simmed a single game. I have played every single game. So I'm hoping that I can at least make it through the playoffs in year two, before other things take my time. But one of the things that may or may not prevent me from doing that is the fact I'm also playing my GM as the Brooklyn Nets. My Nets are 43-21. And again, I have not simmed a game. I've played all 64 of those games. So I'm 43-21. So I'm nearing the end. I got, you know, like 20 or 19 games left till the end of the regular season. I'm second in the Eastern Conference. The Cavaliers are a game and a half ahead of me, but I'm first in the division. The Raptors are 2.5 games behind me. My owner is very happy because I've accomplished a few of the things that he wants me to do, namely have a couple of draft picks by the trade deadline. I'm also, you know, my cash flow is still negative. I'm at a negative $3.75 million, but the fan interest is at 100%. Team chemistry is at 77%. I've really remade the team. I've had a lot of injuries, rash of injuries. For much of the year, Brooke Lopez was injured. Joe Johnson was injured. Right now, Darren Williams, my starting point guard, is injured. So right before the trade deadline, I got an offer from Minnesota. And so, Kat, I traded Brooke Lopez and Mirza Teletovic for Nikola Pekovic and Kevin Martin. Kevin Martin then, within the second or third game, dislocated his patella, and he is now out for the year.
Like Kevin Martin does.
Like Kevin Martin does. But the good news is, quote-unquote good news, air quotes, is that Brooke Lopez tore his calf. So he is also out for the year for Minnesota. So I feel that was an even trade, I think.
Because that's what happens to Minnesota.
So my Nets were 43-21. We're in the stretch run of the year, and I'm looking forward to a good playoff run. But, you know, it's really interesting. Like, I play a lot, clearly, of NBA 2K, and I don't win all the games. I mean, it'll be interesting. I have a feeling I will get past the first couple of rounds in the Eastern Conference without a whole lot of difficulty. My conference record is really good. But, boy, whenever I play those Western Conference teams, man, when I have played Oklahoma City, when I played Memphis, when I played Houston, when I played Golden State, they take me apart more often than they don't. So it'll be interesting to see if I can win. So that's what I have been deep into and continue to be deep into. So NBA 2K15, yeah, that has been my longtime addiction. All right, we're going to take a second here. We're going to talk about Harry's. I have found a much better way to shave. Not just the buying experience, not just the shaving experience, but the whole thing. So here's the deal. I don't know about you guys. I shave every day. And, well, let's just say that before I found Harry's, it wasn't exactly the best part of my day. For many of us, shaving's a pain. It sucks. It's uncomfortable. It causes nicks, cuts, scrapes, razor burn. And as all of you know, razor blades are, like, really outrageously expensive. Harry's was started by two guys who wanted a better product without paying an arm and a leg to get it. So enter Harry's. Now, these guys sent me a starter pack, and it has, and I'm not joking, this is not an exaggeration, it has completely changed the way that I shave forever. I am now a customer. Harry's makes their own blades. These things are high-quality shave. It's better for your face and also for your wallet. These guys like the blades so much that they bought the factory in Germany. These are high-quality, high-performing German blades. They're crafted by shaving experts. It's a better shave that respects your face and your wallet, so no more poor-quality blades. The nice thing is, not only is the shave better, but it's also cheaper. This is an efficient business model that allows for factory direct pricing to you. It's a fraction of the drugstore costs, and you don't have to go anywhere. There's no pesky plexiglass cabinets to unlock. It's about half the price of other big branded blades, and they ship for free to your front door. You don't have to go anywhere or do anything. The starter set that I mentioned, they sent it to me. It's an amazing deal. For $15, you get a razor, moisturizing shave cream, and three razor blades. And that starter pack is what hooked me. I'm in. I'm now a customer. I'm paying for this stuff myself because it is by far the best way to do it. Why would you pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades that aren't as good when it's half the price and it's a better blade from Harry's? On average, an everyday shaver saves $150 a year on blades using Harry's, and they guarantee your satisfaction. And again, here's the deal. Even if I wasn't saving money, the shave is better, and I would use it just for that, and they ship it to me. The fact that I'm saving that kind of cash is fantastic. I cannot emphasize this enough. I'm telling you guys, Rich Grisham, I am a customer of Harry's. It's the best way to shave that I've ever done. I'm in. I'm paying for it. Of course, I'm using my code to get myself a discount, which you can get too. So here's what I would strongly recommend that you do. If you want to experience a clean, close, comfortable shave with Harry's, you go to harrys.com now. Harry's will give you $5 off if you type in my coupon code PRESS with your first purchase. That's harrys.com, and enter the coupon code PRESS at checkout for $5 off and start shaving better today. I'm telling you guys, harrys.com is legit. It is a better shave, it is less expensive, and it is a better experience overall. Trust me on this one. Check it out. Try it for yourself. I would not steer you wrong. Well, all right. Moving on to our 2015 season preview. Lots of things to talk about. Very interested. We're not going to go game by game and do predictions or anything like that. We are going to just take a bit of a broader look. And one of the first questions I have, and we're going to go around the table. One of the first questions I have for the panel is this the year 2015 where we will see any major franchise, so I'm talking about the big time licensed games, make a significant departure from the norm, whether that's altering price, the delivery, or something else? So I'll start with you, Brian Weedye. Is this the year where a major franchise makes a significant departure from the norm?
I'm not sure this is the year. Now, we know EA is looking forward to different methods of distribution or earning revenue, whether that's subscription or free-to-play model on the consoles. And I still am of the belief that there's going to be a time when they branch off Ultimate Team games into their own free-to-play games. I don't think that's this year. I think we're only a year or two away from that. I don't anticipate anything dramatic happening this year, although it would be interesting to see if they do try something new. I think we're on the brink of that happening, but it just may not be happening this year.
Kat Bailey, same question to you.
No, because they have a business model that works, which is Ultimate Team. The second that Ultimate Team shows signs of tailing off, they might start investigating new approaches. But I think that right now they're thinking, let's not fix what's broken, and we'll keep things pretty much the same.
Well, it's interesting because Electronic Arts just recently had their quarter results, and pretty much every analyst that I read was very impressed. The stock has come back, and a huge part of that has been the continued success and increased revenue generated from Ultimate Team, notably FIFA and Madden. Chris Sanner, is this the year we see any major franchise make a significant departure from the norm?
You know, I guess at this point what NBA 2K has done with their modes is considered normal, but I would expect someone might try what they've been doing with MyGM and MyPlayer as far as just the narrative, more narrative approach to those kind of modes. So I don't know if that's departing from normal, but I think that'll be something you see a little bit more of this year. Someone's going to try it, someone else, I would hope at least, because NBA 2K, for all of its faults, it gets those two things quite right.
Owen, good?
I don't know. I mean, yeah. As Chris mentioned, you've sort of got the business model departure from the norm, and then there's the content model departure from the norm. And it, you know, just not even now 2 years into this console life cycle, I'm not sure that either there's the will or the means for something that transformative. I agree with Kat that EA, you know, it's like. It's like the shelf product almost is a loss leader. I know it's not literally a loss leader. They make money off of this stuff. But clearly what they care about are these, you know, perpetual, persistent online games that have microtransactions involved in them. And there's no need for EA to move off of that. I don't know that there's plainly NBA 2K, you know, is moving in that direction with VC. And its commitment to, you know, sort of that whole suite of your entire online persona and then everything that you can do with whatever experience that you earn there. If you want to buy it, you know, you can do that too. I think EA would be the one to make some kind of a daring move, and I don't think that there's any will for that. And the others have found, you know, rather, you know, safe positions where they are. And even a franchise like Pro Evolution Soccer, which finally has its feet underneath it, you know, isn't in the space, nor does it have really the wherewithal to try anything strange. So, no, I think we're going to see more of the same this year that we saw from last year. And obviously, you know, last year was a transition year for some franchises. So, you know, now they want to make sure that they do it right in the second year.
Well, we're going to talk about this specifically more in a little bit, but the one franchise that I could see making a significant departure would be NBA Live, and that would be for its survival. We're going to talk a little bit more about it later on, but I think of all of the games, NBA Live has the most opportunity to either come in at a lower price, and again, I don't know if contractually that's possible. Generally speaking, it has not been, but we don't know the state of the contract. Or the delivery model, perhaps going all digital, perhaps being much more focused on Ultimate Team, or perhaps just being something different because... Whether or not you think it was an enjoyable experience, and I certainly had fun playing NBA Live, it completely pales in comparison not only to NBA 2K15 from a content and feature set and from what's actually happening on the court. It frankly pales in comparison to all of its other games. Now, granted, when you've got 10 games or 5 games or 100 games, something's going to be number one and something's going to be at the bottom, and NBA Live is at the bottom, but there's always going to be a winner and a loser. But I think I will be very surprised if NBA Live is delivered and priced exactly the same way this year that it was last year. Owen Good, your thoughts on that?
First of all, I think they're going to stay the course with how they build the game. You know, in talking to their executive producer, you know, they seemed very certain about building the kind of traditional packaged good that we all expect. And I don't think – I mean, I think NBA Live is the kind of thing where if this particular strategy does not pan out, you know, of providing a full-service basketball title, that they end up going to that kind of online-only, you know, ultimate team mode kind of thing and then just sort of forget about the rest of the product and – offer it at whatever price and make money off the transactions, but I don't think that judgment has arrived yet, and I don't know what they would do in terms of content with a packaged good that could differentiate it right now from what I mean all of the things that NBA 2K does. I mean, you know, hell, they have European teams in that, whether that's, you know, creating some kind of a gala presentation mode, you know, centered around the All-Star game or, you know, some other thing. I mean, or maybe it's tied to, don't they keep talking about some World Cup of basketball, which hasn't been played yet, but if that's introduced, they'll want to have some video game property that's out there leading the charge. And I don't know, maybe there's a special mode that EA Sports can do on it. But NBA Live is, I don't know that that's, I don't think that they're in a – they have to do something, but I don't think they're in a position where they have to do something this year. I think that they understand the sunk cost. EA Sports understands the sunk cost aspect of this, and they're just, you know, keeping their skin in the game, and it'll be time to fish a cut bait next year or later.
Brian Bede, I know you have some thoughts on what NBA Live should do. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah. You know, when you look at things like sales numbers and you see NBA Live is selling essentially 1% of what NBA 2K is selling on a yearly basis, going at them traditionally, I don't think is ever going to work. And the longer if they release the game this year, which I'm not certain that's going to happen, but if they do, and it doesn't somehow build on what's there. And again, that seems unlikely at this point because the brand is so tarnished. That you know, they'll have no choice but to cut it loose, or they have to do something unconventional. And that's why I thought, as far as breaking games off into their own ultimate team free-to-play games, which EA had essentially talked about in their investor call, they want to have free-to-start games, which in essence they've kind of done with EA Access and the ability to start and play for 6 hours and continue your progress, although that's only limited to Xbox One. But if you think about it, how many people are going to give NBA Live a chance at $60? It's not many, and we've seen that the last 2 years. How many people would give NBA Live a chance free to play, where if they actually enjoy the game and it's actually a good game, then they start spending money in this ultimate team-based game? I think that's the direction to go if they're going to attempt this, which I think is pretty much inevitable at this point. That would be the game to start with, because what they'd have nothing to lose by doing that. It's just a matter of making sure that they could, because we believe, I think Owen knows this too, that this is the last year under the current contract they have with the NBA. If they're going to extend their contract with the NBA, they're not going to sign on for some big deal for 3 years under the same model they've been doing now. I think it's going to be something different. And they're going to work something out in this manner, because they keep citing things like, yeah, Ultimate Team, but it's also they go back to their mobile games, which has the engagement level has gone up, and they've been making more money on mobile since they switched it to free to play. I think it's just a matter of time before that happens. And I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, but if it's the difference between NBA Live not existing and NBA Live existing, I think people would be open to that.
Well, all right, guys. Valentine's Day is almost here. You know it. I know it. It is that time of year when you can get yourself in more possible trouble than you could ever expect if you don't do a nice job by your spouse or your girlfriend or your significant other. If she tells you that she does not want anything for Valentine's Day, what she means is, get me something for Valentine's Day. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. So show her that you thought of something unique and different this year. Get her the gift that she's sure to love, which is Sherry's Berries. Here's the deal. These guys are good. They offer giant, freshly dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries starting at $19.99, which is over a 40% savings. If you go to berries.com, click on the microphone and type in my code PRESSROW, you're going to get an awesome deal. And just for my listeners, you can double the berries for just $10 more, but you have to use my code PRESSROW. I'm getting this for my mom and for my sister's family. I'm sending these out to them. Legit, I'm doing it. I'm paying for it myself. That's how good these are. I got sent a batch a couple weeks ago, as I mentioned on our last show, and they were fantastic. My wife and my son both devoured them, left me a couple of the scraps left. Thank goodness that there were a few left because I got to have them. They were terrific. They're dipped in white milk and dark chocolatey goodness. These things are topped with chocolate chips, decorative swizzle, or nuts. And again, you get 40% off from Sherry's Berries if you just use my code PRESSROW when you order them. These are giant, they're romantic, they're fresh, they're juicy. They're really good. Again, I mean, I'm not just saying this, right? I've got them, I've eaten them. I'm sending them out to my family, a couple different people on Valentine's Day. I mean, come on. Who doesn't want to send their mom something nice on Valentine's Day? So here's the deal. The only way to get this amazing Valentine's Day deal, it's giant, juicy, freshly dipped strawberries starting at $19.99 or double the berries for $10 more. Visit berries.com, berries.com. Click on the microphone in the top right corner. Type in Press Row. Let's go to berries.com. Click on the microphone. Enter my code Press Row. Order today. You won't be disappointed. Your significant others will not be disappointed. No one you send these to will be disappointed. They are fantastic. They're really good. Trust me. I've eaten them myself. I'm ordering for my family. Good stuff. All right? Thanks, guys. Well, all right. Up next, an entirely subjective question in every way possible, not only because it is completely based on opinion, but even what the definition of at stake means. I'm going to start with you, Cat Bailey. What franchise has the most at stake in 2015?
NHL, just because the NBA 2K, FIFA, Madden, they're all pretty well established. NBA Live is kind of in its own universe. Pro Evo Soccer, you could say, is on the rise. You could say they have a lot at stake in the sense that they have a legitimate chance to break through again and become a well-respected series. Not to say that they didn't already do that to an extent, but like break through even more, I should say. Whereas NHL took a pretty dramatic hit last year, and it's... We've gone over this about everything that happened, but it feels like unless they enact a really big turnaround, you know, that stink doesn't go away very easily. And NHL fans will be like, all right, well, maybe we'll give them a mulligan for what happened to in NHL 15 as long as it never happens again. But if it happens twice in a row and it's just subpar, well, then you got a real problem. And in that regard, I think that NHL will be under a great deal of pressure to really turn things around this year and just do very well.
All right, so Chris Sanner, same question to you. Again, not scientific, purely subjective. What franchise has the most at stake in 2015, according to you?
I think that answer is actually, I mean, I think it really is obvious. It's NHL because it's just that franchise has been so good for so long, they have to come back. And if they don't, are we going to lose another big AAA sports title if that game just does not come back? I mean, it's really sitting on the edge. I am of the belief that it's going to come back and be great. The other one, probably if NBA Live does appear this year, that's got to be a solid effort. I mean, there is no doubt about it. If it's just not any good this year, then there's no way that franchise makes it another year. I couldn't imagine, at least.
Owen Good, in your opinion, what franchise has the most at stake?
I'm going to say NHL. And for the same reasons that were mentioned before, but I'm going to be most interested to see what they do obviously the story of that franchise, and frankly, you know, one of the biggest stories of sports gaming last year was how much didn't carry over from NHL on Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 to the new generation of consoles. And everyone was rightfully outraged. You know, at sort of being, you know, given this gimped version, lacking the things that had made the game, you know, so enjoyable. And it's important to remember when you cut modes out, you know, you cut out segments of people who buy the game exactly for that mode and maybe for nothing else. So they really alienated, I think, a lot of a very diverse, you know, installation base. But if they come back, it's like they are really kind of screwed, because if they stick to their guns and they go, you know, the game that we released in 2014 and all of the crap that it took, that's the one we're going forward with, and we're just going to refine the modes that are within it, you know, fine. Then everybody still is going to say, you know, I still don't understand, you know, why you don't have this other stuff that's in there. If they add other things back in, then EA is doing what EA is always accused of, which is killing stuff off in 1 year and bringing it back, you know, 1 or 2 years later. And that's just going to be ugly. So I think that that's got, you know, the most at stake. It certainly got the most at stake from a publicity management point of view. They have lost a lot of shine off that brand, lost a lot of goodwill, lost a lot of benefit of the doubt. And I'm going to be very interested to see how NHL reacts when it's not in this position of, you know, assumed to be one of the big four that come out every year, you know, that has that badge on the front of the box, you know, 26 Sports Game of the Year awards, whatever the hell it is over the years. It's down around the MLB 2K level right now, and they need a rally.
Brian Weedy, same question to you. What franchise has the most at stake in 2015?
Yeah, I have to agree with pretty much everyone. It's NHL, and I don't think it's really even close. If you look back at sports game series over the years, most of them can survive one disappointing or poor release. When you get to two or three, that's when people really start to jump ship. I think this is a little different just because of the way EA handled it. It wasn't so much that the game was poor or missing features, is that a lot of people felt like they were misled or lied to or just treated poorly along the way. And I think in some sense that's more difficult to overcome. There were a lot of people who didn't buy the game this year that would have if all the features were in. And once you lose people, and once those people realize that, you know what, my life goes on when I don't have this game, they become a little more selective about it, and they may not come back just because features are put back in. So I think at the sales levels NHL reaches, which isn't, it's not very, you know, compared to all the other sports games like we talked about, it's way below them. So can the series survive if it has another disappointing year, or if people just don't come back to it? That's a real question to ask. And so I think it's important that they not only reestablish the game in terms of features, but they have to do something innovative to draw people back in, because I think just adding back features isn't going to be enough. And if they come with excuses again that, look, we had to spend all our time putting these features back in, people aren't going to accept that anymore. They're tired of being treated in that manner. So I think NHL is definitely the one that has the most on the line this year.
You know, my take on this question is a little different, and it's not that I disagree with any of you. I don't. I certainly do. But I tell you, one of the things that I've been thinking about quite a bit lately, I think the Madden franchise is really at a tipping point right now. This is really their first full year development cycle on the new console. It is comfortably or uncomfortably, depending upon who you talk to, sort of in the middle. Like if you were to stack rank power rankings of sports video games, Madden is not at the top and it's not at the bottom. It's, you know, in the middle. And we got a tease last year with the introduction of Madden of sort of a different way, slightly different way to experience a sports video game with the introduction. The NFL is absolutely the king of all sports. Madden is clearly, you know, from a financial perspective, has, thanks to Ultimate Team, risen back to being a real revenue machine for EA. And I think there's a lot of things going on in the world of Madden with what it's going to be next year, how the improvements are going to be at the core level, how they're going to continue to exploit Ultimate Team. There's a lot going on with Madden that could really propel it significantly upwards or keep it at the same level. And, you know, I really think this is a very crucial year for Madden in a lot of ways, and it's going to be fascinating to me to see how it is received, what is delivered, and what its focuses are, because I have a feeling that it's going to really be a little bit different than people are expecting. That's not insider information. I have no info to that. It's just, I think is riding on Madden this year.
No, it's funny to think about how much we talk about these franchises like they're actual sports teams. You know, Rich, Madden, they've been a 500 team these past few years, but they took a real step forward after last year's draft, and I think that if they really kill it this offseason, they could be a contender, you know?
Yeah, so what, the Madden is basically the Cowboys going into last season?
No. Is that... But the Cowboys are perpetually overrated. I can't even think of it. They might have been the Washington Wizards of a few years ago, where they were constantly stuck at that middle of the pack level.
Wizards,
it's a good,
good
analogy for an NBA team.
Yeah, Wizards are good now.
Yeah, they are good now. So yeah, maybe that's a good thing for Madden.
Good point.
I just like the thought of Madden, which doesn't have a great challenge system in the game, finally getting the playoffs and getting screwed by a reversal. That just seems fitting to me.
Oh man, does it ever! All right, so moving from what has the most at stake, what franchise do you personally feel the best about in 2015? Again, not based on last year, but you know, what do you feel the best about in 2015? And we'll start with you, Owen Good.
I feel like coming out of the console transition and how everybody managed it. You know, I know that Madden had a very good year, and clearly, you know, is a game that benefits the most from the new hardware, both in presentation and then just sort of what else it's able to do, you know, with a game that has 22 people on the field at the same time. But I also think that MLB The Show, its online problems notwithstanding, and frankly, you know, there's never been a baseball game that has satisfied anybody online, really. I think The Show is in, you know, decent shape. I've seen the feature list that they have. It's not exactly, you know, eye popping stuff, but I think that they remade their game enough last year, especially with the you know, with player lock and I mean quick counts if you use those, but player lock especially, recognizing the appeal of the Road to the Show mode and figuring out how to apply that to the regular franchise modes that they have, you know, to minimize that burden of a 162 game year, which is just ridiculous. You know, I think that they have really set themselves up on good footing. You know, obviously it's the game that is the weakest in terms of presenting something that looks like a sports broadcast. And that's an intellectual discussion for another day, whether these should be games that, you know, games as we play them or games as we watch them on TV. But I do feel good about The Show. In ways that I didn't feel at this time last year. We were haranguing them to death because we didn't have a release date for any edition of this game until I think it was, you know, early March or something, or late February.
Yep.
It certainly wasn't early February, and wasn't before Valentine's Day. I think it's a little bit more of a known quantity. I think it's a little bit more of a known quality. And I'm looking forward to getting back into that game.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the fact that it's coming out right around opening day, I am totally fine with that. I'm totally fine with that. Chris Sander, what franchise do you personally feel the best about heading into 2015?
Well, I think this one's easy, too. It's NBA 2K15, 16, whatever. I'm getting my years mixed up. We switch years and all that. I don't know. But anyways, it's the NBA 2K franchise because – Their modes are the best in our genre right now. The gameplay is up there amongst the best. The presentation's up amongst the best. I mean, they can only get better from here. The only thing that concerns me is how they like to fiddle around with making single-player modes online, and you can't play it for like 3 days after release, whatever. But that franchise is in great shape. Runner-up to me, actually, and surprisingly, I think it's Madden. I think Madden is on a great track right now, just with everything that's going on. It has its fair share of critics, but I mean, this year I have not seen this positive a response to the game in a long time. And history says, you know, they're going to do something to completely mess it up, but if they don't, you know, just like the Cowboys, they are a contender this year for sure. I mean, if the defensive back AI is reworked, you know, the zone coverages, et cetera, it could be a special game this year. So I'm excited to see what happens with it. It's on good footing for the first time in a while. So we'll see if they Jerry Jones this away or not.
Cat Bailey, what do you personally feel the best about heading into 2015?
Man, this is actually a really hard question for me because I was a lot higher on FIFA 15 than pretty much everybody, and I called it my sports game of the year. And I stand by that. I think that it's a really excellent soccer sim still.
I love it.
I will politely disagree with Chris in his assertion that that NBA 2K has the best modes. I think FIFA 15 still has the best career mode, bar none. And I'm not talking about manager mode. I'm not talking about player mode.
You don't have to politely disagree, Kat. You can get after it here. This is Press Row. We don't hold back. Go after him.
I know. You should. Don't take it easy. Come on now. Come on. No, I'm kidding. Kat, I do agree with you. FIFA's modes are great, too.
But I digress. I have sensed over the past year a growing backlash or dissatisfaction with FIFA. The sense that EA is kind of resting on their laurels with this game. And that is maybe the sense that FIFA's gotten so fat and happy that they're like, well, we're not going to screw this up. We're not going to have to do anything. We're not going to change anything. This is how it's going to be.
With that too, you know?
And I worry that if we get, you know, the same thing again, kind of in FIFA 16, which it's oversimplifying, right? It's probably going to be an excellent game again. I'm afraid that the backlash will be strong. And it may be surprised to find suddenly FIFA's Metacritic score or whatever dropping into the 70s, people going, FIFA's not changing. They've gone fat and complacent. What's going on with them? They've fallen so far behind. Fair or unfair. So in that regard, though I'm not necessarily a basketball fan myself, and I don't play a lot of NBA 2K, I have to say that I feel the best about NBA 2K because you could say that that 2K has the eye of the tiger. They're constantly going out every year making wholesale changes to their game, like pushing the envelope. They really seem to hunger to be the number one, the consensus number one sports game. And I think we'll see it again with NBA 2K 16. And you know, if they could just get those online problems, those tech problems sorted out, I mean, I would have no problem saying that they're the best sports game around. But we've gone over everything with the VC and all that. They were much better this past year than they were with NBA 2K14.
Yep.
But it's still an ongoing issue. But with that said, you know, in a very roundabout way, despite politely disagreeing with Chris Sanner, I feel the best about NBA 2K at this point.
Brian Weedy, what franchise do you personally feel the best about heading into 2015?
Yeah, I thought Kat made some good points on why you might be a little worried about FIFA, but every game has some major question marks, and to me, FIFA has the least of them, or the ones that would concern me the least at this point. FIFA is it's a dependable game. It's such a deep game. I think it's one of the few. You know what you're going to get with it for the most part, and everything works properly. Again, it's been a complete product for years. So FIFA is the one that to me I feel you know, safest about. But again, that could be a concern. Like Kat said, it's safe, but there's not really excitement either. So we have to see what they do. At some point, all these games, at some point, they all have to innovate or take a chance, or else people grow tired of them. And it's happened over the years, and sometimes they innovate and it messes things up, and sometimes they innovate and they're rewarded for that. At some point, I think FIFA has to do that. But right now, yeah, they're in this mode where they don't want to screw things up. But I don't. Again, that makes me feel safe about it. It doesn't necessarily mean that's the game I'm going to be most looking forward to, or play the most, or any of that, or it's going to, you know, if it's going to rise in sales or anything in that regard. But that's the one I'd feel safest about at this point, for sure.
The game that I feel the best about personally, or the franchise that I feel the best about, and I feel good, frankly, about almost all of them. I feel good about NHL even heading into next year based upon, you know, some of the stuff that I've recently read from the on Operation Sports from some guys who have made some trips up there, and from the representing the community. I feel great about Pro Evolution, the fact that it exists and it is a terrific game. Feel good about, you know, all the major games except for NBA Live, as we've spoken about. But the game that I personally feel the best about is NBA 2K. But the reason I feel best about it is because, to me, they have opened up the development team to members of the community by bringing in guys like Scott O'Gallagher and Nino Samuel and Leftos, by bringing community guys in to the development team. I don't know any other franchise that has done anything close to the level that they have. These are, and I'm not talking about on the court development, you know, that's all great. But just the fact that, to me, it feels like, unlike a couple, 2 or 3 years ago, where 2K Sports, to me, felt tone deaf, like they weren't paying attention, now it feels very different, where key guys of the team are from the outside. They're now on the inside. They have direct lines to the community. They're representing what people want to see. That's why I personally feel the best about NBA 2K. And it's even been represented in the latest patch to 2K, how they have significantly addressed things that they have not in the past. So I've been very impressed with what 2K has done with adding to their team with some very, very interesting folks who bring a lot to the table and come from a different area. They don't come from a traditional development background. So that's why I personally feel best about NBA 2K, but there are a bunch of franchises I do feel great about. All right, so we're going to head into not a lightning round, but now we're going to sort of do some quicker hits. Around the table, yes or no, Owen Good, will NBA Live be back?
I think it will. I don't think it makes any sense for them to. I mean, if they were renegotiating a license, let me back up on this. Yes, games have been canceled coming right up to the end. It's because they had an active license because the game was seen as viable. Last year was NBA Live's walk year. And Sean O'Brien said, we're going to be back for 16. Yep. So I'll hold them to that. And if they cancel at the last minute, it will be one more colossal embarrassment, and that'll be, you know, at the end of the series right there. So I suppose that it's conceivable that for some reason, you know, management says, all right, we're no longer paying money on this. But it wouldn't – I think the proof would be in them pulling back support on this after its launch, and we haven't seen that yet. And rumors do fly, and I guess we'll find out, you know, this spring. But I'm going to go ahead and say that, yeah, I'll take what they said at face value. NBA Live is going to be back. And, you know, if it isn't and it turns out this is all a con, well, you know, then that will affect things going forward.
Chris Sander, will NBA Live be back this year?
You know, lightning round. So I say yes, but I do not feel comfortable. That is a very slight lean to the yes.
Kat Bailey?
Yeah. It's pure speculation at this point, but I think Owen makes some good points. I don't see – they're in it this deep. Might as well see it through.
Brian Wiedei?
Boy, not a whole lot of confidence from the panel, even with the yeses. I've been as close to 50-50 as you can be, because I don't think they've made very wise financial decisions necessarily with this series. So just expecting them to make what would be the most logical decision isn't necessarily what they'll do. So I'm close to 50-50, but I would go 51-49 no.
I'm going to say yes, and again, for exactly the reason that Owen said, on this show, Sean O'Brien guaranteed NBA Live 16, and I have no reason to feel that that was incorrect. Obviously, those decisions ultimately are above his pay grade, but I have a feeling it will be back. Brian Weed, I will stick with you for this. What do you make of the PGA Tour delay? We haven't mentioned PGA. It was unveiled or re-unveiled without the Tiger Woods name at E3 last year. It has since been moved from its original quarter. What do you make of the delay of PGA Tour?
Yeah, I think this is interesting. I just wrote about it. We've got it debuted at E3 last year. 8 months passed without really EA even talking about it at all. And then it got delayed without them really talking about it at all, except to confirm that, yeah, it was pushed back. It concerns me in a few – or it could be a positive. It could be a negative, right? So the debut was kind of disastrous because they focused on the whole fantasy course thing and made it look like an arcade game. And that's their fault for projecting that image. And people did not receive it well. So there's a possibility that they had this idea for that product, and then they changed course, and now they're going to make more of a sim game, especially after seeing how well games like the Golf Club have been received, and they needed extra time for it. But it does concern me because, look, if it releases after the Masters, I have to wonder if they lost the Masters and they no longer have it in the game, which would be a big deal. And then they're losing Tiger Woods, and that's the identity of the brand. And so now they have to come up with different ways to promote it, and that was really why they did the whole fantasy course thing. So it's I think there's an identity crisis there, and it's not going to have the market to itself now with the Golf Club still sticking around and still being kind of fresh in people's minds as they release updates for it. So I think it's in a tough spot. And EA is going to have to release a really solid game, especially with this extra development time. Not just the extra year, but the extra 3 months.
Owen Good, your thoughts on the PGA Tour delay?
Yeah, well, it's like everything else in games development. This has not had an announced launch date yet. It was only a quarter. It was the first quarter of 2015. The first quarter of 2015 ends March 31. The second quarter begins April 1. The Masters begins April 9. So, you know, yes, it doesn't sound good that they move it from one to the other, but they haven't announced a launch date, and it's not like they're pushing this thing into July. I don't know. I think it's a bit of a stretch. There's nothing to suggest that the Masters is unhappy with the terms of its deal. You know, the Masters is not some entity that is out there for brand exposure or making money. And you only have to look at the CBS broadcast to understand that, because they more or less say, you know, we don't – actually, it's going to run with limited commercial interruption because we don't – you know, we will pay or we will give CBS a break on the rights that they broadcast so that they don't have to put a bunch of ads up there to defray that cost. I mean – people have said, you know, well, there's this arcade thing, or they had the Battlefield course, and the, you know, Augusta National may be unhappy with that. This game had, you know, people playing as werewolves at midnight on Pinehurst, and, you know, Augusta National only gives a damn about this insofar as it affects their course, and those things don't happen on their course. As we saw in the career mode at Tiger Woods PGA Tour 14, you all wore the same uniform for that reason. Now, obviously, they'll want to correct that, but I'm not seeing where that golf club either is unhappy with this relationship or is somehow so profit motivated by it that it makes the existing terms of their relationship unworkable, and they come back with something that EA Sports either can't pay or finds obnoxious, or EA Sports has a vision for this game that is already obnoxious or further obnoxious to Augusta National. This game doesn't sell without Augusta National, is my opinion. But even then, beyond that, look at all of the courses that are in this that EA Sports has the exclusive rights to that no one else does, because all of these other contenders that we're talking about out there on the landscape don't have a single real-world course in them. And that matters to people. It obviously matters more than Tiger Woods, because that's why you know, nobody gives a crap that you're on a PGA tour if the tour that you're playing doesn't reflect the courses that are being played in real life. And I just, this parlor game about, you know, is Augusta unhappy with EA Sports? I'd really like to hear some evidence that they are, because I haven't heard any, and I think it's all speculative. Now, the delay is something else altogether, and I don't know, you know, why that is. They've had, you know, 2 years to work on it, but that first year, you know, was like so many other things. They were... The PGA team is not as dedicated as you think it is. There are people who work on PGA who work on Madden, and I mean Madden is their primary job. And there are people on PGA, you know, who have gone over to NBA and have had to come back. So this is, they may have looked at this and said, you know, we didn't see the kind of sales before the Masters that, you know, justified, you know, taking another month to make the game better. I don't know. It doesn't look good, but I think it's a lot of people just sort of out there looking for, you know, some reason that this thing is in trouble when there's been absolutely no evidence of that.
Chris Sanner, what do you make of the delay of PGA Tour?
Well, I can say, I can't say, but I can say there's not much reason to worry about anything we've talked about here. The game is apparently on track. I don't know. Apparently, the best thing I can say is that it was never coming out in Q1. No one knows, from what I've heard, why it was ever scheduled there. And I would not expect it any time before May 1st, for sure. That's what I would say at this point. But, yeah, the game looks – I mean, it sounds like it's coming along nicely. They're just I really don't know why they had it scheduled there. I hadn't heard anything about it coming out before May 1st up to this point even.
All right, so we'll stick with you to start off, Chris Sanner, as the official indie sports game correspondent of Operation Sports and the Press Row podcast. Will we see any other emerging titles? You've already mentioned Perfect Golf, so that doesn't count. But any other emerging titles on the indie scene in sports games on consoles? Perfect Golf is not console, a la The Golf Club or Super Mega Baseball. What do you think?
Well, it depends on how you want to define sports and, you know, where you want to bring sports to. But there is a game entering beta this March called Snow, which is basically going to be a Winter Olympic type of game. Yeah, well, when they get done with it. And it's going to be – I know they're starting out with just skiing, but I know they're expecting to add snowboarding and a bunch of other stuff. It'll be a big open world mountain. It'll be a really cool experience if they get it right. Other than that, I mean, you got Ollie Ollie 2 later this year coming out, and I know there will be other things. I'm sure you can expect the trials, that sort of thing. So, yeah, there's going to be some good titles this year. The question in the podcast I recorded earlier today for the OS podcast was, will there be a transcendent kind of title in the indie game region for sports games, which we haven't seen yet, really. We haven't seen that for sports games, and I don't know if that's the case this year, but there's going to be a couple really solid titles once again.
Cat Bailey, do you think that there will be a resurgence or other emerging titles independent of the big licensed guys on consoles?
I mean, do we have any idea how well Super Mega Baseball actually ended up doing?
I don't. I don't know if anyone else does.
I don't think its sales numbers, you know, anywhere come up to the level of the hype or the acclaim, you know, that critics have given to it. I mean, and I think Metalhead would say that too. I mean, you know, it's a limited installation base. You look at the leaderboards; there aren't that many people on PS4. There aren't that many people on PS3.
I think, in terms of being transcendent, a indie sports game would have to do something that no major sports game can possibly has ever done, while having really good production values, or at least, and when I say production values, I don't mean like necessarily super realistic graphics, but like really good art, or just really good physics, or something. To offset the fact that it is inevitably not going to have the licenses. Once you get outside of the major sports like soccer and baseball and basketball and all that, you start getting into more niche appeal. Maybe there could be a really good tennis game, or something to that effect. But I think that indie sports games, while there's certainly an interest for them, have real challenges to overcome and real hurdles to overcome to be able to kind of be transcendently popular, to break into the mainstream consciousness and away from the sports game hobbyists like this panel.
Brian Widai?
Yeah, as far as consoles go, that's tough. I mean, like on PC, you have Beyond the Sidelines football from the Out of the Park baseball, the same people who make Out of the Park baseball. So on consoles, though, I mean, it's not like they would see the success or relative success of a Super Mega Baseball or a Golf Club, get an idea into development and get it released this year. We knew about Super Mega Baseball, which was under a different name for, what, 2.5 years, Rich?
Yeah.
I mean, these things.
I first saw it at PAX East, I think, 2012, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, these things take time, and they're really battling the odds when you're an independent game developer on consoles. So I'm not sure if I see that happening. I hope we're pleasantly surprised later in the year. But as far as, like, major sports go, yeah, probably not.
Owen Good?
I think, I mean, if I understand the question, you know, properly, it's like, you know, could there be a surprise coming out of left field? And I think the only way that you would get a surprise is, you know, again, you recognize the high barrier to licensing and the fact that there really almost is nothing new under the sun within the sports genre, because you're dealing with, you know, the need to not only replicate a game that is played in real life on television and, you know, looks like something on that, but has also, you know, been replicated by generations of console, you know, sports video gaming. I think if there were to be a surprise, it would be in something like Major League Baseball buying Super Mega Baseball. Now, I have zero intelligence that says they would do something like that. And if they did, I don't know. First of all, I don't know why they would, but the second thing is you would have a game that ended up looking a lot different. A lot of that game's charm is in its own unique visual appeal. You're not going to have guys tugging their jock on the mound. You're not going to have, you know, the scratch and spit as they step to the plate. You would have to have, you know, sort of cartoon representations of Major League Baseball stadiums. I think, you know, I sort of jokingly suggested that Major League Baseball should buy the game, you know, should buy Metalhead and then, you know, take it just its pitching and hitting systems and put it into a game, and then that would be much more interesting and better than RBI Baseball. But I think even that would be something that is so complicated and so hurried and so corrupted that it wouldn't have the kind of appeal that everybody would want. You can't just skin that kind of game in Major League Baseball uniforms and still sort of have the same magic and appeal. So, no, I don't think there's a lot of surprises. You know, I think, again, this is just – it's like the 100-meter dash, you know, world record. And every year in iterative sports development, you're just sort of shaving hundredths of a second off of it. And I don't think that we are, you know, really going to be seeing, you know, epochal changes, you know, not unless – I mean, you'll see it coming. You'll see it coming because somebody will give up the license. But even then, baseball, you know, 2K gave up the license a couple of years ago, and nothing's happened since. And there's a major platform out there that has zero baseball presence. So –
Good point. Brian Widai, take us out.
Yeah, there is one game, and I it slipped my mind, and I don't know how, since I wrote about it 2 weeks ago. Mutant Football League is supposed to release this year on PS4, Xbox One, PC, and mobile. This is a game that started as a Kickstarter project and failed in Kickstarter, and then they kept developing it anyway. And, yeah, it's originally the target release date was summer. And now they're just saying they want it out hopefully by the end of the year. So there actually is one coming. And it might be intriguing to a lot of people, especially those who played the original back in 93.
I certainly remain dubious on that one's actually coming to fruition, but hey,
sure. There are
I've got to step in on this. I mean, there is absolutely no way that isn't brand confusion. And they don't own the IP. And if that thing ever gets close to releasing, EA will kill it in the crib. I mean,
but they call it Mutant Football League instead of Mutant League Football.
Oh my God!
What could
are
the
you
problem
kidding?
Possibly, be?
This is textbook brand confusion. And seriously, you know, it failed as a Kickstarter for whatever reasons. And when we saw the demo reel when they said, you know, we're still going for it, and yes, it shows some kind of potential. But it also looked very boring, you know, even for. You know, it looks very constructed, I think, is probably the better adjective there. But even if they come close to actually launching this thing on PC, EA is going to absolutely nuke it. Because they own that IP, and they are keeping it on ice because the NFL and EA are thick as thieves, and the NFL doesn't want some other, you know game out there, you know, chipping off of whatever it sells. It wants to be the only American football game out there. This thing is not going to happen.
Well, all right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, everybody, for participating. As always, we appreciate it. I want to remind everybody that we are at PAX East 2014 for the third straight year. We are there at the Bumblebee Theater on the Saturday at PAX East. It is a panel which we are finalizing the actual participants. We're going to have a healthy representation of Press Row podcasters there, as well as some special guests. Very excited. Talking about sports games at a crossroads, many of the topics that you have heard us discuss in brevity or in detail tonight. So I'm excited about that. Really looking forward to that. I hope if you are going to PAX East, you can make it there. That is on the Saturday at PAX East. I want to very much thank Owen Good from Polygon, Brian Weedy from Pasta Padre, Kat Bailey from US Gamer, Chris Sanner from Operation Sports for being on the show, the kickoff to Season 3 of the Press Rub Podcast. I can't believe it. How many episodes we've been done. This is our third calendar year. So exciting. So much fun. Thank you to the great people at Operation Sports. Thank you to our great sponsors. But most of all, thank you. Thank you to everybody who's listening and who continues to listen and to support the show. We would not be here if it were not for you. So, on behalf of Brian Weedy from Pasta Padre, Kat Bailey from US Gamer, Chris Sanner from Operation Sports, Owen Good from Polygon, I'm Rich Grisham. Thank you, as always, for listening, and we will talk to you again real soon. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. We ask that you please subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher and the Windows phones. We also ask that you give us a rating. That really helps us a lot. We also ask that you please follow each of our panelists on Twitter, and they are as follows. Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good. Pasta Padre's Brian Weedy at Pasta Padre. Polygon Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar. That Sports Gamers TJ Lowerman at That Sports Gamer. US Gamers Kat Bailey at @_CatBot. Operation Sports Chris Sanner at ChrisSNR. And Operation Sports Steve No at Steve_OS. And of course me, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham. So thank you so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. And we really want to thank the great people at Operation Sports for making this show happen every single week. So thanks. And we'll see you again next time.